better than expected, but not as good as last quarter. Want to guess our mystery indicator? In New York, I'm Tracy Samuelson in for David Brancaccio. 2.6%. That's how fast the economy grew in the final quarter of 2018, according to initial estimate from the Commerce Department out this morning after a delay due to the government shutdown. So growth is solidly in the twos. That's down from more than 3% last quarter and over 4% mid-year. Consumer spending, a big part of the U.S. economy, also grew at the end of the year, but again, at a slower pace than the previous quarter. Here to discuss is Julie Nieman. She's an analyst with Smith, Moore & Company in St. Louis. Hey, Julie.
Good morning, Tracy.
So, Julie, dig into today's numbers for us. What are the parts of the economy that are doing well or maybe less well?
Well, the key thing is the consumer is slowing down from two major reasons. First of all, the shutdown. That had a big ripple effect through the economy. And yes, it did end January 25th, but it made everybody very skittish and it really pulled out of consumption there. But the tariffs are having a bigger and longer impact on it. And especially here in the Midwest and the agricultural area, it's causing real damage to farmers. And so we're seeing big losses in income because of the tariffs. And this is continuing on and on. And this is one of the key areas where we're going to lose a lot of economic growth.
Okay, and if we zoom out to the full year, growth was about 3%. That's solid. Obviously peaked in the second quarter with more than 4%. But what do you think? Can we keep up these levels in 2019?
Well, in 2018, though, the market had the Red Bull of the tax break. Now, the tax break actually was very uneven. It helped corporations tremendously. Very little actually trickled down into the consumer economy. And the economy is run by consumers. 70% is relying upon consumers. So unless it really trickles down to the rest of us, you're not going to get a sustainable growth right there. It's all in the numbers, and that's what we had last year. Growth was in the numbers as opposed to really effective growth in the U.S. economy.
All right, Julie Nieman with Smith, Moore & Company in St. Louis. Thanks so much, Julie.
You bet.
President Trump cut short a meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un earlier today after failing to reach an agreement on nuclear weapons and sanctions. Trump said North Korea wanted full sanctions relief in exchange for dismantling some of its nuclear program, but not all. That was a no thanks from the U.S. Marketplace's Jennifer Pack has been following business reaction to the summit. Hey, Jennifer.
Hi, Tracy.
So leading up to the summit, we saw some interest, some excitement from investors in China and South Korea. What were they hoping for?
Well, they were hoping that the economic sanctions would be lifted and that North Korea would open its doors to foreign companies, right? And, you know, North Korea has outdated infrastructure. I spoke to a South Korean investment firm. They were looking at construction projects to help North Korea upgrade. And also, every year, North Korea has a trade fair. Last fall, China had twice as many companies sign up, 40 in total, in part because President Trump and Kim Jong-un met in Singapore. And, you know, at this trade fair, I was told that the North Koreans, they didn't just introduce their companies. They also explicitly gave details of, for example, what their tax policy is like, the price of water, electricity, land. Also, if you want to hire a North Korean worker in your factory abroad, how much would that set you back? By the way, $119 a month. So this kind of detail is unprecedented for such a closed-off country because even the most basic economic information is really a mystery to most experts in North Korea.
And so now that this summit has ended without an agreement, sanctions remain in place, what happens to those plans, to that interest?
Well, I don't see this enthusiasm disappearing. It just means that the plans they had might have to be delayed for a bit, which isn't exactly a bad thing. For a long time, people knew investing in North Korea was going to be risky because there are lots of practical hurdles. For example, how do you keep in touch with your North Korean client? People in China who have done business there said it's very difficult. Very few North Koreans have a telephone that can dial internationally, so you have to wait for them to contact you or meet them in person in China. Next is payment. You know, that's a huge issue. How do you get paid? For a while, up until 2016, we heard that North Korean companies were only paying by cash and in coal. You know, economic sanctions, yes, they're still in place, but there is a lot that North Korea has to do before people can feel safe to do business there. And at the same time, there are also some strategic interests. You know, countries like Russia, for example, they're very interested in building, for example, pipelines through North Korea so that they can send energy resources to Japan, to South Korea. So these interests, I don't think, is going to disappear overnight.
Marketplace's Jennifer Peck, thanks so much.
Thanks, Tracy.
And now, turning to currency. The Federal Reserve says the number of $100 bills in circulation has doubled since 2008, matching the number of $1 bills out there. Marketplace's Ben Bradford reports economists don't agree on why, but crime could be a reason.
It's a movie cliche for a reason.
This is tough.
The drug dealer, in this case Scarface, dropping a briefcase with tightly stacked $100 bills in it. The drug trade does run on cash. But University of Maryland economist Peter Reuter says it's not causing the spike in $100 bills.
The drug business is probably declining in terms of revenues because drugs are getting cheaper.
The extra hundreds may be going to a more mundane crime, says Harvard economist Kenneth Rogoff.
People are avoiding taxes. That's the majority of it.
Paying for services like housekeeping in cash and not reporting it.
And the growth is simply that that's cheaper to do.
Low interest rates mean there's less benefit to storing cash in the bank. Nick Collis at DataTrek Research offers another reason. More people outside the U.S. are holding on to C-notes.
You can drop yourself into any country on this planet with a stack of $100 bills, and you will not go hungry.
Whether as a stable form of currency or for crime, the Chicago Fed estimates as much as 80% of American hundreds are actually held abroad. I'm Ben Bradford for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm Tracy Samuelson with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.